The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we kick off another week of broadcasting here on KPCG, kpcg.fm, if you listen online. Well, most of you are well aware of the prophesied military clash to occur between two major powers right at the outset of the Great Tribulation that Jesus speaks of in Matthew 24. This clash prophesied in Daniel 11:40, the king of the north, headed up by modern Germany, and the king of the south, radical Islam, led by Iran. And in this Daniel 11 confrontation, Iran pushes at the king of the north, prompting then that northern king to come against it, or to come against radical Islam like a whirlwind. That's what it says in the Bible verse. But as my father's also noted regarding that prophecy, really one of the more significant components to it is that the United States, the world's lone superpower, is not even mentioned in that prophecy. My father mentioned that to us in, I think it was an editorial meeting or a college forum, I can't remember exactly, but it was in 2009, and here's the United States of America missing from this crucial prophecy, and as he explained in that meeting, it was because, or it is because, that by the time this clash happens, the United States is going to be too weak to do anything about these earth-shaking developments. And so Daniel 11:40 is just as much about the astonishing downfall of the United States as it is about the emergence of these two prophesied power blocks. And as I keep bringing out on this program, what continually amazes me is that the United States, as the United States is on the way down and out, it's the United States that is largely responsible for empowering these two blocks, these two major powers. You can go back and listen to a program that I did on this recently. This was from May 31st. Germany and Iran are on the rise, and U.S. presidents are helping to empower them. That was the title of that May 31st program. You can go back and listen to that if you like, at thetrumpet.com or at our kpcg.fm website. But today I just want to follow on with another study, more specifically about America's support for the Iranian regime and its quest for nuclear weapons and its sponsorship of international terrorism aimed primarily at the West, aimed at America and Western Europe, Judah, or the little nation of Israel. There was some explosive testimony last week, from last Thursday, in fact, and I'm not talking about James Comey, the hearing on June 8th. There was another hearing, which the major media, they could care less about this, but there was another hearing before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, and it had to do with the United States or America's efforts to counter Hezbollah's global network of terror, Hezbollah's global network of crime. And testifying before that House committee was David Asher, Dr. David Asher, who previously served as an advisor to General John Allen at the Defense Department, at the State Department. I think today he runs a couple of think tanks. In any event, we'll play for you a little bit later what David Asher had to say about those years under President Obama and how that he was so obsessed with finalizing a nuclear deal with Iran, that he was systematically disbanding all of America's anti-terror units that were focused on disrupting Iran and Iran's sponsorship of terror. I mean, that's a scandal of epic proportions, in case anyone in the major media would like to take note here. But here again, just to give you some of the important background, we've discussed this on the program. We've written about it at thetrumpet.com. This effort to reach out to Iran, it was something that this president, President Obama, was obsessed with from the very beginning, even before he came into office. In 2008, he was using all these secretive back channels to ensure, or rather assure, that the supreme leader would receive the United States' friendship. He made it clear to the Ayatollah that his administration would be much different than any other administration of the United States. And so you know about how soon after the election, well, he gave the Cairo speech, and then right after the Cairo speech in 2009, you had the Green Revolution, and President Obama just turned a blind eye to that. He didn't help those freedom fighters. He didn't help that democratic uprising like he did in so many other areas. He took aggressive steps, as we covered in that May 31 program. He took aggressive steps to prevent that popular uprising from toppling the Iranian regime. He wanted to work with the Iranian regime. And so from that point forward, there in early 2009, virtually every foreign policy decision that President Obama made, you can run right down the line. Virtually every single one helped to strengthen, to embolden the Iranian king of the South. It helped to strengthen Iran and its proxies like Hezbollah, which was the subject of that House hearing on Thursday last week. It was as if the United States, all through Obama's presidency, was pushing for Iran to become the king. And, of course, it was finalized. You could say the coronation ceremony happened on January 16th, 2016, with the signing of that Iran nuke deal. Now, in the months that have followed, and really some of this was coming out all last year even, during the final year of President Obama's presidency, but much more is coming out now that he's out of office. I mentioned this Politico piece from April 24th. I think we went through it the next day, so maybe the April 25th program, if you want to go back and even listen to that one as well, about this Politico piece, Obama's Hidden Iran Deal Giveaway. And this article talks about how that when it was announced, you had the nuke deal, and then, of course, there was the prisoner swap along with it. And the exchange of cash, or not the exchange, it was just the United States delivering cash, palletfuls of cash to Iran in exchange for these prisoners. And as part of this deal, well, that Politico piece from a month and a half ago, it goes back and explains how that following the deal last year, President Obama announced that this was a one-time gesture. We're not going to be doing this all the time, but, you know, it works well for us because they free up American prisoners, and we give them some prisoners as well, low-level, not really dangerous ones. So it's a good deal all the way around. That's the way it was presented. But Politico says here that the administration representatives were not telling the whole story. They weren't telling the whole story last January, and they haven't since. And no one in the media, no one is interested enough to look into it further, excepting just a few of these reports the one piece at Politico, which is a pretty well a left-leaning publication, I can add. But what about the testimony last week? No one's interested. They're certainly looking for, searching for any kind of scandal that they might find in the Trump administration. But not so with his predecessor. They didn't tell the whole story. Josh Meyer in that Politico piece said that, you know, those seven men that we freed, that they were portrayed as civilians. And really, they were awaiting trial for sanctions-related offenses. So they weren't hardened criminals. They weren't terrorists. Politico says, in reality, some of them were accused by Obama's own Justice Department of posing threats to national security. Three, allegedly. Well, it just goes on to explain. I won't go into it again. I went through it in late April. But even Obama's own Justice Department said that these men were dangerous, that these men posed threats to national security. And yet they were handed over. And we shipped $400 million in cash to the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. I mean, the same outfit that had put some of those Americans in jail. And all of this was done in order to make sure that this nuclear arms agreement was finalized. This is from tablet piece, following that Politico piece. It's from, I don't have the date actually, I think it was soon after that Politico piece came out, but it says, a few months after Obama left the White House, people are starting to realize there was some strange stuff happening the last few years on Pennsylvania Avenue. Some strange things, bizarre things, dangerous things, in fact. And this tablet piece goes on to say how that if you felt like the whole thing leading up to the nuke deal was like an ad campaign, think Ben Rhodes. Remember him trying to craft the narrative? If you think that this was an advertising campaign, you're right. You're right, because it was crafted, indeed. It was crafted to try to convince you that something that's really bad, this is a bad deal. Remember what Prime Minister Netanyahu said of Israel? This is a bad deal. And yet you had Obama and all of his spokespeople out there saying this is a good deal, including Obama himself when the deal was signed. This is a great deal for the United States. And now we're beginning to see just how bad the deal really and truly was. And so you come to this testimony from last Thursday. Here again is David Asher, Dr. David Asher, who worked at the State Department. He's now running some think tanks, and this is what he had to say before the House Foreign Affairs Committee. From Thursday. This is the same day as the Comey hearings last week, and one that didn't get nearly the kind of attention that Comey's hearings got. And of course, at the Comey hearings, you had some pretty amazing revelations there. He admitted, Comey did, that he was a leaker, for one. And then, if anything, it was Loretta Lynch that pressured him when it came to the investigations going on with Hillary Clinton. But never mind any of that. Let's try to find out what's wrong with Donald Trump and how he supposedly colluded with the Russians. Even that whole charge, I mean, that came tumbling down as well, if you look closely into the Comey hearings. But as I said last week, we don't need to dwell on that like everyone else in the media has been doing. But listen instead to Dr. David Asher's testimony from last Thursday. Here's what he had to say about some of the efforts to take down this terrorism network, Hezbollah in particular. But, of course, Hezbollah is sponsored by Iran. We'll begin with clip one from that testimony.
I'm proud to say that a seamless collaborative web of combining a small group of U.S. agencies was established and leveraged to combat these activities using every agency's unique authorities. It's with the sort of whole of government approach that makes you proud about being a part of this government. It's a combination of law enforcement, financial, criminal, civil, and regulatory authorities led to a wide range of actions, which you've heard about, providing a framework to deter, disrupt, publicly illuminate the global illicit Hezbollah network. And I think it was probably the most successful operational effort taken against Hezbollah to date by the U.S. government after many years of inaction.
So that's Dr. David Asher talking about just how successful this anti-terrorism operation had been. They were working before Obama came along to deter, disrupt this network, and he was proud to be a part of it. It had been quite successful. But then what happened? He goes on to explain, clip two.
Yet, in the last years of the previous administration, for reasons that most definitely had to do with the Iran deal and concerns of interfering with it, which I thought were totally unfounded as a former nuclear negotiator with Iran and North Korea, we lost...
Pull the microphone a little closer.
We lost much of the altitude that we'd gained in our global effort. And many aspects, including key personnel who were reassigned, budgets that were slashed, many key elements of the investigations that were underway were undermined. It was a bit of a tragedy and a travesty, and I think it's it was, again, very unfounded. But today we have to deal with the legacy of that and how to rebuild this capability.
So here the budget was slashed. They lost the momentum that they had been gaining, and he concludes there by saying, "Now we've got to try to figure out how to rebuild this capability that we once had to disrupt this global terrorist network." I can't believe that it was disbanded, as he says there. I mean, this is totally unfounded. There's no support for this kind of activity. He goes on and says here in this testimony, clip three.
Moreover, neither al-Qaeda nor Hezbollah has ever been organizationally prosecuted by the Department of Justice for repeatedly attacking the United States, killing thousands or hundreds of our citizens, and for being tied to a wide range of transnational organized crimes in violation of our laws. And by the way, the same is true with the Islamic State, which I had the honor to be the deputy special coordinator of on the economic warfare side at the State Department a couple years ago. We have not applied mafia-style RICO prosecutions that would aim to incarcerate the members of these organizations for life, take away their sanctuary, strip them of their finances, and undermine their credibility. And I frankly have no good answer why, except that I've heard from people, including Director Comey, that there's a sense of fear that if we do this, that's going to lead to reprisals. I personally spearheaded the targeting of the Lebanese Canadian Bank, a $5.5 billion bank that was at the heart of Hezbollah and Iran's finances in Lebanon. We did not receive retaliation as a nation for bankrupting their largest financial institution. I think the fears are overwrought, and I find the phobias surrounding prosecution of terrorists baseless, bizarre, and moreover, largely against the spirit and the letter of the laws we are sworn to uphold.
Again, that's David Asher commenting on how we just haven't gone after the terrorists, and it's for political reasons. Whether it's not just Hezbollah, al-Qaeda, even the Islamic State. I mean, last week we talked about the United Kingdom, the position that it's in, largely because of these kinds of policies, just invite the enemy in or to not go after them, to just let them have free reign, to give them the freedom to roam. And then this is in a slightly different way here with respect to al-Qaeda, Islamic State, Hezbollah, and so on. But look at how it's weakening our nations. Look at the sickness from within, and look at how it spreads and how it spreads so fast. I mean, he's talking there about officials, U.S. officials, who are going after these terrorist organizations, and they're being pulled back. Or in some cases, they're afraid to come forward. Fear of reprisal, including coming from Comey himself, who has said that some didn't speak up. Notice that last part from the statement where he says, look, we're not even upholding the laws that we have sworn to uphold. Fear of reprisal. The Washington Free Beacon writing on this testimony or this hearing from last week Evidently, we didn't grab this soundbite, but David Albright, he's the former UN weapons inspector. But he also testified about the misplaced, as he said, the misplaced fear of disrupting the nuclear deal. So there was all this pressure. We have got to get this deal done. And so if that means we've got to give the terrorist network a little more space to maneuver, then so be it. So be it. And in this testimony, I mean, David Asher goes and talks about just the level of evil in these organizations, Hezbollah, and then the governments of Iran and Syria and Venezuela as well. Notice what he has to say here, also, again, from that hearing, clip 4.
The level of cooperation between the government of Venezuela, the government of Iran, the government of Syria, and Lebanese Hezbollah that we observed in undercover operations that we personally were involved with, including people in this room, was absolutely astonishing.
Absolutely astonishing, the cooperation between these rogue states. And here, the U.S. government, these law enforcement agencies, these investigative units, they were focused on disrupting this network. And as you heard from the first clip that we played, they were having a great deal of success up until just a few years ago, when Obama could see the finish line in finalizing this nuclear deal. And then everything is systematically disbanded. And officials are reassigned, and some go into retirement, and they lose funding. You talk about a scandal, and no one is interested. Here the United States squandered a chance to really, it was coming as the Free Beacon piece brings out, it was coming at really a very low financial cost. It had a chance to really disrupt this network, Iran, Syria, Venezuela, Hezbollah, this global organization, all of Iran's proxies that are out to terrorize us. And we've seen a lot of acts of terror in recent weeks. So why not go after this criminal network? Why not disrupt things? Why not get inside their banking systems? I mean, if they're in partnership with the world's foremost drug cartels as well, I mean, this is a grave danger facing the United States. And yet the nuclear deal took precedent. It was the most important thing. And what happened, as Dr. Asher brings out, everything else basically took a back seat to that. Clip 5.
People were making a decision that the counterterrorism mission and the Iran nuclear deal was a central and all-important element, whereas containing Iran's malevolent forces was less important. I think you can do both, and we have to do both. And I don't think it's an either-or. And if the Iranians don't like it, too bad. You know, they blew up our embassy twice. They killed hundreds of Marines. They went after us in Iraq when I was working with the Special Operations Task Force in support of them there, and killed nearly 800 Americans with explosively formed projectiles designed by Hezbollah. I have a beef against these people, obviously, and we have the tools, thanks to the great work of the DEA and other law enforcement agencies, to take them apart financially, economically, politically, and strategically using law enforcement, which the world will respect.
The world will respect that, just acting with strength. And as he said, I mean, you can, in his view, you can do both. I mean, he doesn't even really sound in this testimony. He doesn't even really sound like he's really against the Iran nuke deal. But as he said there in that clip we just played, what he really felt like the U.S. should have done was both go after the nuclear deal and also contain Iran's malevolent forces, that terrorist network. And if Iran doesn't like it, well, too bad. And where was any of that kind of an attitude? over the last several years of President Obama's administration. Instead, it was like, hey, we're not going to say or do anything that would offend them. We'll give them their prisoners back. We'll stop going after those ones that are hardened criminals abroad. And now you get to this man's testimony. Funding was slashed. Investigative officials reassigned. The Washington Free Beacon. It says here, after Asher's testimony, that's Dr. Asher, Royce called the scenario. This is one of the congressmen, I think, presiding over the hearing. He called the scenario a striking lesson in life, which is the zeal for the deal, which becomes a deal at any cost, and people get caught up in that. That's quoting the congressman who presided over the event. He's a Republican from California, I believe. But the zeal for the deal. And so the Obama administration turns a blind eye to the Green Revolution. He makes all of these concessions. He lifts sanctions. He gives them prisoners back. He hands them a pile of cash. His officials along the way, they lie about it every step of the way, making it seem like this is a good deal. This is an excellent deal for the United States. Notice this point here from the Free Beacon. The dismantling of these investigative units is just one of many aspects of the nuclear deal and its impact on U.S.-Iran policy receiving new scrutiny in recent months. That's the exact same point that Politico made at the end of April. Now that Obama's out of office, I mean, some of this is receiving new scrutiny. And we're finding that there are a lot of nefarious things going on. And yet the major media in the United States, they could not be more disinterested in this. I mean, here are real scandals. And they're gone searching for fantasy scandals. For scandals that aren't even there. I mean, even the Russian meddling in America's elections last year. Who was over the United States at that time? Who was the president of the United States? Who was the attorney general? Who was the director of the FBI? I mean, until Donald Trump was voted in on November 8th. Well, even during the transition period, he didn't have the power. He didn't have the power until he was inaugurated in January. He wasn't presiding over these government institutions in the United States. And all through the last year of President Obama, here you have all these scandals, the Iran nuke deal, and then we learned all about the prisoner swap and the cash. I think that was in July or August. The investigations of Hillary Clinton. Russia trying to intervene in the U.S. elections or to tamper with those elections. And there was nothing. There was nothing in the left-wing media about any of these scandals along the way. Only now, because their favorite candidate lost, the bitterness has set in. And their only focus, their only objective, of course, is to go after President Trump. And it's not even that he's been doing everything right. Or that he isn't going to be the one to rescue the United States from this downfall. Again, we're not even mentioned in Daniel 11:40. We go missing from that prophecy. And you can see why. Because there's so much sickness from within. And by the time that that clash happens, the United States is going to be too weak. It's going to be too weak to even do anything about it or to even get involved in any way. When we come back, we'll play a little bit more from that hearing that happened last week on Thursday, same day as the James Comey hearing, Thursday, June 8th. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
Canadian Bank, which we did one way or another. We observed billions of dollars that were under the control both of Lebanese Hezbollah, and we knew which accounts they were and how much money was in them through unclassified means, as well as Iranian money, and it was billions of dollars, too.
And what banks were that? Was that again?
The Lebanese Canadian Bank, but there were many others that were part of a network. So everything we saw was larger than anyone expected, and the other thing was the connection to money laundering and drug trafficking proceeds was much greater than we ever expected.
Okay, so if
everything we saw was larger than what people expected. You have the connection here between money laundering and the drug trafficking. That's how Venezuela gets drawn into this. And it was all bigger than we expected to see even going in. And as Dr. Asher goes on to note, I mean, what are we supposed to do? Just turn away from this and ignore what's happening? That's exactly what the Obama administration did. Notice what else he said about ignoring facts. This is clip 7.
You know, you can remind people, we have a legal responsibility to enforce this act, and we can't willfully ignore the facts. I've unfortunately seen a lot of willful
ignorance. You can't use the JCPOA to be derelict in your duty, right?
That's right.
And that's what's happening in too many cases.
It is happening.
That's one of the congressmen egging him on. You can't use this nuclear deal to be derelict in your duties. You can't justify ignoring the facts just because you're trying to sign a deal. One of the many scandals that continues to turn up. The Free Beacon, by the way, it says further, this is the article from last week about the hearing, but it says within the article later on, critics this week also are questioning why the administration never publicly disclosed an Iranian cyber attack on the State Department in late September 2015 that sent shockwaves through the department and private contractor community. The administration, it never did say, it didn't tell the American public what was happening, that the United States was being attacked. The United States was being attacked by Iran through cyber warfare. It didn't tell them about all of these connections between Iran and Syria and Hezbollah and Venezuela. The connection between Hezbollah's money laundering and drug trafficking in Central and South America. It didn't tell the American people about Hezbollah and Iran moving on Iraq, something that we've talked about for so many years. It was prophesied. Dr. Asher got into that in his testimony last week as well. Clip 8.
You can see a very significant movement of Hezbollah financial operatives tied to the business affairs component of Islamic Jihad into Iraq in the last few years. They've established a whole string of businesses in the south in partnership with Iraqi militant groups. It's obviously part of some sort of strategy that they're executing for their Iranian friends.
Just for clarification, in the south, do you mean in places like Basra and Nasiriyah?
Yes, but also into the southern belts of Baghdad as well. So you see it in some of the mixed areas. They have a sort of economic action plan that they're executing to infiltrate the Iraqi economy, with the Lebanese playing a much more significant role.
To infiltrate the Iraqi economy, this economic action plan, I mean, we said so many years ago about, well, we asked, in fact, in a title, one of our trumpet titles, will Iraq fall to Iran? That's happened. And as I've repeatedly brought out in recent weeks, it's the United States that's helped to clear the way. It's the United States. I mean, we cleared away Iraq, and then we're empowering Iran and all of its proxies, Hezbollah. And then in the case when they are caught in these money laundering schemes or sponsoring terrorist atrocities, we pull back on the investigations, or we pretend that they're not there, willfully ignoring the facts, willfully ignoring it, lying to the American people. We're not talking about the cyber attacks. And you see why these problems just get worse and worse and worse. Another clip here from Thursday. This is clip 9.
So I have on my cell phone some pictures that were sent to me by a financial source who's not a U.S. government source. I do some work for financial institutions on anti-money laundering and sanctions compliance. And that source sent me pictures of $1 billion in two pallets of shrink-wrapped U.S. Federal Reserve $100 bill notes that were being moved through a European country into West Africa, into a South American country by Iranian agents, it appears, to set up some sort of port-to-port scheme, perhaps involving narcotics trafficking. Whether the money is the money that was given by my State Department colleagues, unfortunately, in my mind, or not, you don't see $1 billion in palletized cash with Federal Reserve Bank of New York symbols on them, the wrappers, every day. The fact is that money's being moved around for operational and devious reasons. I don't think it contributed whatsoever to creating a more peaceful relationship with the Iranian people.
That's obviously lashing out a bit at what President Obama said, or how he justified giving them loads of cash. I don't think he's saying that that was the actual cash exchanged in January of 2016, but it, as he indicated there, it could well be money that the State Department has given to Iran, and now you see it circulating through European nations into West Africa, on its way over to South America by these Iranian operatives to strengthen this terrorist, this crime, this drug network. And it's not adding to the peaceful relationship. It's not helping to bring peace between the United States and Iran, is it? It's just making the problems worse. Just like we've said. I can remember an article, I forget who wrote it, at thetrumpet.com, just talking about how, I guess, yeah, it was Joel Hilliker, saying how that if they were that intent on sponsoring terrorism and killing Jews and Americans and Europeans when they were being crippled by sanctions, I mean, what is this regime going to do when the sanctions are lifted and when it's just flush with cash? And when all of these connections to Syria, to Hezbollah, to Venezuela are no longer disrupted? Because that's what's happening. Joel Hilliker's point was that if you thought it was bad when those connections were being disrupted and when they didn't have the cash because of the sanctions that were upon them, think about just how much worse it's going to be when they have the means to carry these things out and when you have Western officials that are just saying, well, Let's not pursue these terrorists. Let's not try to go abroad and bring these terrorists to justice. Let's just let them roam and try to sign this piece of paper, and that will solve everything. He was asked, Dr. Asher here, he was asked what the root problem is with respect to Hezbollah, and as everyone should know, of course, it's Iran, the state that's behind this terrorist organization. Clip 10.
Any one of you, gentlemen or lady, is the root of the Hezbollah problem not Iran?
Absolutely.
And is the root of the Iran problem?
The IRGC, of course. And I worked to build the plan at CENTCOM, where we went after the Iranians from various levels for various things that they did, including the IRGC, which, unfortunately, much of that was abandoned as we got closer to the JCPOA. Whether you advocate a regime change or not, we don't accept the regime and its activities, and there's no way to divorce the IRGC from the Iranian economy and from the Lebanese state, in effect.
So a lot of that was abandoned, as he says there. I mean, that's an explosive charge. It was abandoned. The closer we got to the JCPOA, that's the nuclear agreement from last January, the closer they got to it, the more Barack Obama was abandoning all of these anti-terrorism measures. Well, but was it worth it? The Obama administration might say, or the officials that supported him might say, well, but we got them to stop the pursuit of nuclear weapons. And so it's worth it to have some of these smaller, lower level flashes of violence and crime and so on in order to get the big deal done. Well, with respect to nuclear weapons, Dr. Asher had some fascinating things to say. You'll remember some of this from my father's Key of David program. He had some insightful things to say about Iran. And again, this network, this nuclear network, you bring North Korea into it. And what is Iran capable of doing? Or perhaps what has it already done? This is one last clip from Dr. Asher's testimony before the House Foreign Affairs Committee last Thursday, June 8th, clip 11.
But I'm very concerned about outsourcing. The thing we learned with North Korea in 2002 with the Al-Khobar agreement was that countries could outsource. In 2002, there was an agreement between North Korea and Syria to build Al-Khobar, the nuclear reactor for the nuclear weapons program of Syria. That broke ground in October 2003, according to unclassified information you can get on the internet. That's exactly when the NIE, the CIA, or the National Intelligence Council put out, said the Iranians put their weapons program on hold. The idea that they could have outsourced it has always bothered me personally as an official at the time. And then in 2012, the Iranians and the North Koreans signed a science technology agreement that's almost exactly the same as what they signed with Syria, between North Korea and Syria in 2002. And at the signing ceremony was Fedayeen Abbasi Devani, the head of the Iranian nuclear weapons program.
Right.
He just didn't show up very often in meetings. The question is, what is going on? And is it possible that Iran has outsourced? There's no provision in JCPOA over outsourcing, and it does worry me.
There's no provision in that agreement about outsourcing. And he goes back through some recent history. We all know what happened with North Korea and the so-called agreement between the United States and North Korea in the 1990s. And just a few years later, North Korea breaks out as a nuclear power. He went through 2002 and then said, look, the deal in 2012 between Iran and North Korea, it's basically the same thing. I mean, history's repeating itself. And you have this Iranian nuclear weapons scientist, or the one who's heading it up. He's there, present for that ceremony, and he doesn't make an appearance that often, Dr. Asher says. If you just connect the dots, where is all of this headed? Well, my father, again, and ever since the nuclear deal last week, if you go back over the past year with just some of the things that he's been saying, or a little more than a year, I've got one from just a few months ago as well, but certainly those ones following the nuclear deal last January, where my father talked about this connection between Iran and North Korea. Let me take you back first to January 28th, 2016, a little over a year ago. This is on the Key of David program my father gave on America's nuclear agreement with Iran. Clip 12.
We've had a hostage and a prisoner swap, and now it all happened at the very same time. And, of course, it's bringing the emotions of so many people into it because of the prisoners coming home. And, of course, everybody's happy about that. But it's sort of overshadowing the horror of this nuclear deal. Look, you can examine this closely. Anybody can. And see that something is not right. Something is terribly wrong about this debacle, and you're going to be a part of this terrible world that's coming in the future just before Christ gets here. Was it coincidence that the prisoners were released at the same time that we made the nuclear deal? Well, no, it wasn't. Even if the men who made the deal didn't know it, it wasn't coincidence, because it all is playing into the hands of a very evil spirit that your Bible talks about playing a serious role in this end time. The U.S. released for our few prisoners, four or five, and they still have two or three they didn't give us, but we released seven economic criminals, they might be called, and 14 others we were trying to extradite to the U.S. for a great crime, some of them treason. And so those are the kinds of criminals we had in our jails here, our prisons.
That's my father just days after the nuclear deal was signed last year. And of course, we now know a lot more about those seven so-called economic criminals. But he was there commenting on the lopsided swap, and now it's all the more lopsided just because of the revelations we've seen in the last few weeks. Going back to Politico in late April, and now you have this man. I mean, a lot was coming out last summer, as I said. My father's first article, and it was based upon some of those early programs, but you'll recall the title. The unforgettable title at thetrumpet.com, The Worst Foreign Policy Blunder in American History. The worst ever in American history. Where he talked about the lopsided prisoner swap. All the cash we handed them. All the sanctions lifted. He quotes Charles Krauthammer, by the way, from last year, who said, give President Obama credit. His nuclear deal may be disastrous, but the packaging was brilliant. See, it was all a slick advertising campaign headed up by Ben Rhodes and others. Oh, it's beautifully packaged. No one knew what was going on behind the scenes. No one knew about these prisoners that we released. No one knew about the cash until it came out later. No one knew about the cyber attack. No one knew about the State Department and the Pentagon pulling back its investigative efforts to break up Iran's state sponsor of terror network. Now all of these details are emerging. And then even with respect to the nuclear power, the nuclear bomb, you have to ask, well, is that even going to hold? I mean, even if it did, theoretically, even if the best case scenario came from this nuclear deal, they'd still be able to build their own in just a few years. But what about if they outsource it? That really concerns me, David Asher said last week. Notice what my father had to say also from last January 19th, 2016. This is clip 13.
Yeah, did North Korea get nuclear bombs? Yes, they did. Is North Korea, even today, helping Iran build their own nuclear bombs? Yes, they are. And that's what happened in North Korea is going to happen in Iran, and it's going to be far worse. because of their beliefs.
See, that's quite a statement. That was last January of 2016. He didn't say it might happen. He said it's happening. I mean, go back and look at the meeting or the agreement between Iran and North Korea in 2012. That's what Dr. Asher said in the testimony last week. I mean, here they had the head of the Iranian nuclear weapons program on hand during that so-called agreement, or that agreement to between these two nations, this science-technology agreement. No, my father said it last year, more recently, in the program from just a few weeks ago, the Matthew 24 prophecy. He had this to say, clip 14.
Korea is only one of many nuclear powers, and they share their nuclear arsenal with Iran, which is the number one terrorist sponsoring nation in the world, led by, some very unstable leaders.
That's right, some very unstable leadership right at the top. And those are the ones that Barack Obama was extending the hand of friendship to, just like Neville Chamberlain in the 1930s. The same exact mistake made all over again. He, as he says there, I think this was in the previous clip, it's more dangerous with Iran because of their radical religious beliefs. So this is the path that we're on. It's leading to Daniel 11 and verse 40. A spectacular clash. And it's brought on, so much of it is brought on, because of the United States. Today we're focusing more on the U.S. empowering Iran, but you're seeing the same thing happen now with Germany under the current administration, under the Trump presidency. It's incredible to think about just how fast these prophecies are moving forward. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll finish off the show today with a few more emails that we received that we weren't able to get to on Friday's program. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
A few emails here. First, from listeners, you listeners that tune in to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. The first one here from Texas. Thank you so much for the wonderful show about the D-Day invasion last week. I hunger at times for information, and there is little that is true or factual to how blessed America and the allied nations were in this by the Almighty God. It says, and to hear our president and the King of England actually, to hear their actual prayers and words really makes a person see how far we've fallen as a nation away from our God. I do hope you will do more shows later if you have the time and can keep up with the fulfilling of prophecy today. I myself would enjoy them so, and pray that America and the world will know and trust in God soon. Well, we are, at least in the TV sense, we're hoping to take some of that information from last Tuesday's program and convert it into a video for television here in the UK and also for the website. So hopefully we can get a little bit more mileage out of that material, but certainly appreciate that feedback. It's important not only to cover current events, as we've touched on today's program, but also to go back and to review some of those important lessons from history as well. Another one here from our listener down in Abu Dhabi. He says, maybe the safest city on earth After hearing Prime Minister May decide to toughen up her stance on prospective terrorists, particularly the deportation of someone publicly unfurling a certain flag, what will she do with someone who is native-born and does the same? She and way too many others just do not see the real problem, let alone the only solution. Impossible, really, to show complete gratitude for God's truth and his solutions blaring so loudly through the Key of David, the Trumpet Daily, the Trumpet Brief, and thetrumpet.com. Thank you to all who blow God's trumpet like never before. What a blessing to be an active supporter of God's work during the last few minutes of this present evil world, not to mention a part of Christ's bride. And then a few from in response to the trumpet briefs that went out last week. Another one here in response to the D-Day program just says, thank you for the great brief. Would like to see more like this. This one in response to Britain, we have a problem. It says, the Iron Lady said it best regarding the enemy within the British gate. If Britain doesn't change from a pacifist attitude to a proactive do-something-about-it attitude, the carnage shall continue. France, America, and Britain all have a huge problem. Bloodletting seems to be the only thing these dissenters understand. And then finally, one last one. Thanks for the excellent brief on Britain. We have a problem. Once again, it appears Margaret Thatcher saw the big picture many years ago. And he goes on to say how that, or she does, that she believes that she was like a watchman, similar to Winston Churchill. Well, that's all that we have time for on today's program. We thank you for joining us. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll see you tomorrow.